You're tuned in to the Kojo Nam, the show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Later in the broadcast, we'll talk with Marty Baron, the outgoing executive editor of the Washington Post. But first, Baltimore is the largest city in Maryland, but it's the only jurisdiction in the state without control of its police department. For the last 160 years, the state has controlled the Baltimore Police Department. But as Maryland's legislature focuses on police reform for this session, two bills aim to return local control to the control of the department to Baltimore. But how did the city lose control of its police? And what would local control even look like? Joining me to discuss this now is Bryn Stoll, Maryland politics reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Bryn, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Before we get to that conversation, Bryn, you just tweeted about positive cases of COVID in the legislature. What's going on?
So at the Maryland General Assembly campus, they have been doing rapid testing at least a couple of times a week on the Senate side. And to open the floor session that started about an hour ago, Senate President Bill Ferguson announced that there were several positive rapid tests. So they did not say how many members may have had a rapid test result that was positive, but they've put several people into isolation and are trying to do are conducting PCR tests now, the more reliable coronavirus tests, to try to see if those are in fact infections, and then I guess they'll adjust from there.
When you say adjust, is that likely to affect the way they do business?
Yeah, so they are required to do, under Maryland's constitution, to do a lot of voting in person, but they have altered a lot of the other things that are going on around this legislative session to try to adjust for the pandemic. And presumably, if several members were to be infected with coronavirus and potentially have exposed other members, that would disrupt all sorts of plans for in-person voting sessions as they went into isolation and quarantine and responding to that.
Okay, we'll have to see what happens. Let's talk about police reform. House Speaker Adrian Jones is proposing major police reform legislation. What would her bill do?
A lot of things. And there's a number of the proposals that are in her bill, which are, also have similar bills to do similar things on the Senate side. The big things are she would repeal the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights in Maryland, which is a 1974 law, which gives a number of job protections and lays out the disciplinary procedure for police officers statewide in Maryland. She would create a statewide standard for when and how police officers can use force. And it would create criminal penalties potentially for violating those policies. She would reform the state's public records law to give at least some limited access to records from police disciplinary procedures and a number of other things. I mean, it's a pretty sweeping package requiring most state police agencies in the state of Maryland. Police officers now wear body cameras, but not all. So there's a number of smaller departments that haven't adopted those yet. That would become a mandate sometime in the near future for those departments to get on board with body cameras.
Well, she joined us last week on the show we did in your virtual community and gave us a laundry list of some of those measures. But joining us now is Kaylin Young, the Public Policy Director at the ACLU of Maryland. Kaylin, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Kaylin, the ACLU of Maryland has said that it is, quoting here, regrettably cannot support this bill as written. What do you think is missing from the House Speaker's legislation?
The ACLU is part of a coalition called the Maryland Coalition for Justice and Police Accountability. It's a coalition of over 90 groups across the state of Maryland calling on the legislature to support strong police reform and accountability measures. But there are five specific demands that we are really focusing much of our evaluation of legislation on. And particularly, those are a full repeal of the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights, reforming the Maryland Public Information Act to allow for disclosure of all complaints of police misconduct, establishing a statewide use of force policy that will prevent officers from using force unless it's necessary and proportionate to the threat, Removing police officers from our children's schools, and of course, as we're talking about today, returning control of the Baltimore Police Department to its residents. The Speaker's bill, in our opinion, as currently written, simply doesn't go far enough on these certain particular measures, in particular as we look at MPIA and as we look at the repeal of Law Enforcement Officers' Bill of Rights and what they have written right now to replace it, it leaves a lot to be wanting. But we're having conversations now to see if we can strengthen that language and potentially even come on board. But we've got a long way to go.
MPIA being the Maryland Public Information Act, right?
That's right.
Brinstall, Republicans in the legislature aren't on board with this bill either. What are some of their concerns and objections?
Well, I guess the big one is that they would argue, as do representatives for a lot of the police unions, that some of the proposals on the table would start treating police officers differently than other public employees. For example, the personnel records, records of discipline and complaints against other public state employees aren't available under the Public Records Act, and they argue that it's unfair to release complaints against police officers, that making it a crime to violate the use of force policy goes too far, and that the job protections that exist under the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights are, they would argue, the police unions have very strongly argued that those are needed to protect them from a potentially tyrannical chief, that these are good job protections for rank and file workers facing potential disciplines to guarantee their due process. Now, of course, folks on the other side would argue that there's been a loss of public trust in police departments and that greater transparency because of the authority that we put in police is warranted, that police officers are sort of a special category of worker for the state because of the power that they have, and so they deserve greater scrutiny.
Do you believe that Speaker Jones has the votes to pass this reform package, Brent?
Oh, yes. She's quite confident that she does. And her backing, I think, will mean a lot. I think that the two big questions are, one, whether her and the Senate will strike a deal on passing the exact same legislation. I think it sounds like there's votes in both chambers to pass something. Now, whether everyone can get on board with the same bill is a question we don't quite have an answer to yet. And the other big one is where will Governor Larry Hogan fall on all of this? I have asked his staff, but I haven't heard anything him address these issues directly. And of course, if he pulls out a veto, which that's speculative at this point, but if he does, then they'll have to muster the votes to override that, and that's a kind of a wider margin that you have to hit.
Kaylin Young, why doesn't Baltimore have control over its police department?
Well, back in the Civil War, the law was changed such that during the Civil War, the city was controlled by a political party that was filled with Southern sympathizers. And as you know, Maryland, although it is a Southern state, stayed with the Union. Baltimore was placed under martial law as a result of some of the actions of that party, including rioting against Union troops that were transported from the north through Baltimore to the south. And so as a consequence of that, federal government took control, and then they ended up giving local control, or rather control of the police force, to the state after the Civil War. To this day, even as a relic of that movement, the cannons on Federal Hill face the city as opposed to the state because of that. As opposed to facing the sea as a consequence of that martial law to this day. And so as a result of Civil War politics, the control has been on the state level. It hasn't changed. A few changes have occurred, specifically changing how many commissioners there were. There used to be three. It went down to one, all appointed and hired and fired by the governor. Back in 66, it became one commissioner. And in 2009, that commissioner came under the authority of the mayor of Baltimore. But local control now, this bill is specifically about allowing for the city council to be able to have authority to pass ordinance as it pertains to the police department, which is a power that is currently still retained with the General Assembly.
I noticed you didn't mention the name of the party that controlled Baltimore during the Civil War. Was there a particular reason for that?
No, I just omitted it because it's called the Know Nothing Party. They're not in power anymore.
Yes, that's true. K. Kalen, Speaker Jones and other lawmakers want to return control of Baltimore's police department to the city. How do they propose this happens?
Well, under the current bill as written, it just changes a portion of the law, the public local law, to change Baltimore's police department from an agency and instrumentality of the state to an agency and instrumentality of the city. But what's going to end up happening, though, I think, is that that's going to actually be amended out. So the Speaker Jones's bill actually won't be carrying the local control change moving forward. And that's a deal that was struck with the mayor of Baltimore, Brandon Scott, who has coordinated everybody behind Senate Bill 786 and House Bill 1027, the Senate bill carried by Senator McCray, the House bill carried by Delegate Wells. And that approach, what we're going to do is have an advisory board that's going to look at various changes and implications as a result of the change to local control, issue a report. And then what we'll end up having is a ballot measure before the voters of Baltimore in the 2022 election that would fully restore and finally restore local control. And one of the good things about doing it that way, one of the issues with local control is that we have, you know, out of city folk, people from across the state who pass laws and ordinances on the police department of the people of Baltimore. But doing it this way allows for self-determination of the residents of Baltimore as we residents are able to resecure that control.
And you say Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott is crucial to this process. Why?
Well, it's something that he ran on. And, you know, I think that he's been very clear that it's a high priority of his administration. And additionally, you know, with the policing work group that was led by Delegate Vanessa Atterbury during the fall, this was one of the main recommendations that came out of that. So there was a significant alignment with regard to his administration's priorities, the policing work group's priorities, and of course also the priorities of the Maryland Coalition for Justice and Police Accountability also seeking the same change.
Yeah, it's my understanding that he's been talking about this since he was first elected to the Baltimore City Council back in 2011. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That's right.
Okay, got to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. I'm Kojo Nnamdi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picco and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. We're talking about a number of police reform measures before the Maryland General Assembly, and one in particular that would return control of the Baltimore City Police Department to Baltimore. We're talking with Kalen Young, Public Policy Director at the ACLU of Maryland, and Bryn Stoll, a Maryland politics reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Bryn Stoll, Delegate Melissa Wells, and Senator Corey McCray are co-sponsoring legislation to return city control to Baltimore by 2025. Why is their target date 2025?
Well, the part of it, the question is how quickly you can get this in the change to the city charter in front of Baltimore City voters and get them to approve it. There's some discussion of amending that and allowing for if you can get a report together that would say what the change to the charter should look like together in time to put that on the 2022 ballot, that maybe the change should take effect by 2023, January 1st. But if that's not possible, that's too quick of a timeline to sort out all those issues, then the 2024 election would be, in their view, the most logical time to take that to the voters.
Kalen Young, the ACLU of Maryland, is looking at that 2023 date that Bryn Stoll mentioned. Why 2023?
Well, because when we look at the changes that are occurring in Baltimore City, in particular, some of the charter amendments that recently went into effect, we wanted it to be, you know, right away. But we are being cognizant of some of those other changes that are coming into effect, allowing that to occur, allowing to a council to adjust. But then in the following year, building on that momentum, which is empowering the city council to have more authority to do things that it needs to do to help run the city, we're going to build on that with local control in the very next year. It's our view that report that Mr. Stoll just mentioned can be done fairly quickly. Many of the things that report would have to speak on have already been discussed, and some of those issues are already actually ironed out in many ways. And then additionally, the frank truth of it, a little bit inside baseball, is that the 2025 deadline actually, or transfer of control in the bill was actually a typo that occurred as a result of the timeline by which the bill was drafted and submitted just didn't allow for the change to be corrected. And so this is actually the original intent of everyone involved, including the mayor and the coalition as well.
Bryn Stoll, without local control, how has Baltimore been running its police department? What challenges does state control create for the city?
Yeah, so for quite a while now, it's sort of been in a little bit of hybrid oversight, I suppose would be the way to put it. It's not like the governor of Maryland is, you know, taking day-to-day authority over the department. The city has budget authority. They set the budget for the department. They pay for the department. So the state is not handling the budget every year. And the mayor is the one who hires and fires the police commissioner. But they do not have, the council does not have authority to adjust policies or pass ordinances that would change the way that the department operates. So they have to, anything like that, like for example, several years ago, there's an attempt to pass an ordinance that would have required body cameras for Baltimore City mm-hmm. police officers. That had to, instead, it could not be passed by the city council because they do not have that authority under the current arrangement. So you have to do one of two things when you want to attempt to change that at the local level. You either sort of jawbone the commissioner and get the commissioner, the mayor can call the commissioner and say, I'd like you to do this, and and get the commissioner to handle that internally in the department. Or you can go to the state legislature, which meets once a year for 90 days, and try to get them to pass a local bill that would affect the way the Baltimore City Police Department operates.
Galen Young, among people who live in Baltimore, is there popular consensus about the prospect of city control of the police department? Galen Young, what are you hearing?
Yeah, I think that it's really uniform across the city that people think this is a good idea and it's necessary. Indeed, as a consequence of being the only jurisdiction in the state and the only city of its size in the country that doesn't have local control of its own police department, Baltimore understands and Baltimore residents understand how they're in a unique position. This is compounded with the recent history of our, not just recent history, but our longstanding history of misconduct in our police department. And, you know, this is a measure that will allow for, you know, our city council to be able to, you know, have teeth when it comes to holding the department accountable, implementing the changes of the consent decree, and moving our department from its checkered past to a more promising future that can be a better service to the residents.
Bryn Stoll, are there any legislators against this move? What are some of the arguments you're hearing against Baltimore City control of its police department?
Yeah, I would say there's two really big concerns that have been raised and which also have derailed previous efforts in past years to do exactly this. One of those is that because the Baltimore Police Department is a state agency, it has a sovereign immunity in federal court and so can't be sued directly. And there has been concerns raised that if the department is returned to local control and loses that sovereign immunity, that the city might then end up being on the hook for lawsuits in federal court where there are not caps on damages, and that could end up hurting the city budget. The current city solicitor, Jim Shea, argues that is really a non-issue because there's sort of a workaround to that right now where officers can be sued individually in federal court. And then the agreement with the city is that the city will pay those judgments. So it kind of, that is a sort of, it depends on who you ask question over whether or not that would really have a major impact on the legal liability that would face the city. I would say that's probably the biggest concern. There is also concern raised by some people in the police department and some other politicians in Maryland that the city council might get, I suppose, the way they would think of it, as overactive in their meddling in the affairs of the department, that they would, for good or for ill, really manage the department. And what some with advocates for this see as, really democratic local control of the department could be also seen as, unnecessary meddling in the internal operations of the police department.
How do you feel about that argument, Kaylin Young?
Well, as I look at the city council and the work that it's been doing, my previous role before coming to the ACLU was actually working with then Council President Scott in his office as legislative director. And part of that role was working with the city council's public safety committee to provide monthly budgetary and crime stat oversight meetings, where we were able to ask the police department specific questions about, not just how they were helping with the crime fight and trying to reduce crime in the city, but also what were they doing internally with regard to operations. In particular, I'm thinking about conversations where there was a overtime fraud scandal happening in the police department, and it was the city council that was asking the tough questions about why isn't there better policies, why aren't we able to have certain approval processes, why is it all still on paper and not digitized, etc. The city council was asking those tough questions. It wasn't the state legislature. The difficulty, okay, though, is that the city council didn't have any power to do anything about it. And so it was public pressure with the mayor and the commissioner that was able to bring about that change. But the city council is already providing the necessary oversight, not too much, but the appropriate oversight. Every other jurisdiction already does this. So the argument that they might be micromanaging, maybe the Baltimore Police Department needs a little micromanaging on a certain level, but at the end of the day, they're being undermanaged and with oversight as it pertains to the General Assembly.
Good news. We have a caller from Baltimore. Justin is in Baltimore, Maryland. Justin, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Nandi. Usually I'm listening to WIPR right now, but I happen to be channel surfing. And it's a great topic, and I just wanted to share that I had no idea that the separation of the city and its power over its police went back to the Civil War. The justification for that, I think, is no longer existent. It's a very liberal, progressive city, so I think if that's the justification for keeping control away, then it should go back to the people. I would be in favor of that. I think all my neighbors would be. And I think it would also give the politicians like Brian Scott, who's doing a great job, a little more political will to take a tough stance on tough police issues. Thank you for taking my call.
Justin, thank you for calling. By being the only caller from Maryland, Justin took the advantage of speaking on behalf of his neighbors. So thank you. Thank you for doing that. I'm afraid we're just about out of time. Kaylin Young, thank you for joining us.
Oh, a pleasure is mine. Thank you for having me.
Bryn Stowe, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thank you so much.
Short break. When we come back, we'll talk with Marty Baron, the outgoing executive editor of The Washington Post. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Namdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.